still stuck on the grind. I got love for the haters who done lost their mind. I got love for the earth, the waters of rebirth. I got love for the fire in my heart when it hurts. I got love for my people, the poet in the streets. I got love for the brother in the cup making beats. I got love for the dancer, the dreamer, the sun. I got love for the killer who gives up his gun.
Welcome to the Street Poets Podcast. For 25 years, Street Poets has been building community one rhyme at a time. We share our stories because they connect us to each other and remind us that we're all in this life together. Each episode, we'll bring one of those stories to you. We hope, as you listen, you'll hear some reflection of your own story, of the American story, of the greater human story. I'm your host, Art Quiros, and this is Immigrant Song, the Chi Malabar Story. In this episode, former Street Poet Program Director and current board member Chirag Menon, aka Chi Malabar, breaks down his journey from India to America at the age of 12, and the role that rap and hip-hop played in his healing, political awakening, and evolution as a man. Today, Chi serves as a principal in the well-respected DEI consulting firm Third Settlements, while continuing to make music that inspires change and challenges the status quo.
So I was born in Bombay, now called Mumbai. I still refer to it as Bombay. My mom was born and raised in East Africa. She was sent to India for schooling because they had some family still there. My father's from the state of Kerala, which is all the way in the southern tip of India. So their union was unusual for the time because they are intercaste. They don't share a common language. They don't share a common religion. When you think about origin story, especially in a place like India where one's tribe or ethnicity matters a lot, those are just some of the circumstances that I was born into. And it was fraught with a lot of challenges for both my parents.
So two guys can't live in the same alley side by side. Religious rides, firebrand, scar, a black knight. Flashback to a past life. Fate Gunj, housing spheres, overlooking thatch and shoddy made dung huts. Shantytowns sprout and stick out like gout. Politicians talking about forward progress now. So these beautiful folks had their huts burned to the ground. But genius lies and all things simplified. They take couch, mixed it with grass, a few twigs exposed to the sun. It hardened once plastered to a few bricks. Add some sweat and you have a makeshift apartment. Follow the stark stench of humans fuming disease. Where my peoples get by simply on ritual beliefs. It's steep deep in what the British did before they fleed. Left more than just English literature, cricket, whiskey and tea. Psychological damage, famines, but we manage. Cause even a rose grows through cracks in concrete. And a lotus floats, hoping a stream of the Ganges. There's love here, but hate too. For that you can blame karma. And now we just ain't Deepak Chopra and our fame. So why would you want to travel any place farther? You can come leave reassured, your world's a safe harbor. So here it is, the picturesque postcard you chase after. Complete with Taj Mahals, camels and snake charmers. Something like love, something like hope. Something like beautiful, something I wrote. But postcards from paradise rarely sent to me. Postcards from paradise weren't meant for me.
After I was born, my parents were at a university in a town called Baroda, which is a college town, fairly liberal, and that's where I spent my first 12 years. It wasn't a major metropolitan city. It was a city, but probably 500,000 people there. Still sort of caught between modernity and the past, especially in the 80s when a lot of things were changing. There was the assassination of Indira Gandhi. We lived in a pretty pluralistic neighborhood, a lot of Muslims, a lot of Christians, Sikhs, Jains, Parsis, I mean, you name it. So the India that I remember is very different than the India that exists now in many ways, where it's gotten more divisive. And the BJP, which is a Hindu nationalist, fundamentalist party, really, you know, they have their designs on what they think the country should be, and it's one that I just don't recognize. And so for me, that India is like a memory, and when I go back, it's kind of jarring to be in a place that I don't fully recognize, especially socially. So yeah, I was born and raised there, went to essentially a missionary school, a Catholic school, run by Spanish missionaries, very strict, very disciplinarian. But I did have overall a good experience there. I met amazing people, amazing friends, many of them who are still in my life. But I think that experience didn't prepare me for when I moved to the United States, which happened when I was 12 years old. Moved to San Francisco first. And that was obviously a very jarring experience for someone coming from the other side of the world, not really understanding so many things, right? I was still very naive, very innocent. There was a sort of protection around me growing up in a culture where respect for elders and filial piety is a big part of the fabric of the society. And so being dropped off in San Francisco, in an American city, there were just so many things I just didn't understand. You know, how the kids in my school didn't have a respect for the teachers or even for themselves. So there was a lot of violence, a lot of fights. That was all new to me. And on top of that, I didn't really understand the race dynamic, which was very present. It was a diverse school, diverse neighborhood, folks from all over the world speaking different languages, but we were all sort of in this cauldron together trying to figure it out. So that was jarring, unsettling in many ways. So that was my introduction to the United States, just being dropped off in the school, learning how to navigate the public transportation, how to get myself to school, which was very confusing. You know, in India, I used to go to school first on a horse-drawn cart when I was young, and then eventually graduated to an auto rickshaw. I don't know if folks are familiar with that, but it's like a three-wheeler. And it'd be about 9, 10 of us dangling out of the rickshaw, and the guy would take us to school and pick us up. It was very different. So learning how to navigate the public transportation system, and there was always the fear of violence there. When you're a young person, you're actually not aware of the trauma that you're going through while you're in it.
I was tossed to a pack of wolves at an early age. No urban jungle appetite, my tongue a rusty blade. 12 years old with hate simmering inside me. Lost in America with immigrant anxiety. ESL teachers mistreating like I'm dim-witted. Peers diss my misspeaking, cited for the shit kickings. No friends to kick it, so I taught baby sis cricket. Mama's at work, daddy missing since my 6th Christmas. So the TV had to babysit us. Each day's the same, praying today may be different. From fist fights, split lips, scraps and shitless. My name's on, stay strong, fuck it, fuck steam on. Now India's in my rear view, gone is a fearful little dude. Change the first time that he hears cue. On the train scrap with padlocks in my pocket. First motherfucker say something, getting rocked with it. Welcome to the new world. Welcome to the new world.
I was a big cricket fan, like growing up in India, I just loved cricket, you know, like most of the country. And so I remember we had this communal courtyard and there was a swing set that was broken. And I used to take a sock and put a cricket ball in it and then tie it up to a rope. And I would just, but the two cricket bats that like one was gifted to me when I left by my friends and I had that with me. And I would just be in this communal courtyard playing by myself. The sock would just kind of swing and I remember there's actually four brothers, but two of them were around my age, Sean and Alonzo. And they used to play baseball, just like a stone's throw away from where the communal courtyard was. And somehow we just got into a conversation. They asked me where I was from, if I wanted to play baseball. And so I sort of started hanging out with them. And they introduced me to like baseball and then football and basketball. And then eventually hip hop. They would just have this massive boombox that they would bring out. And they would just play these tapes, you know, whatever it was, Ice Cube, Paris, whatever was hot. I didn't know who any of these folks were, who any of these people were. I just liked it. And I was like, okay, cool. So I just tried to adapt by doing what the kids were doing in the neighborhood. I didn't know how to dress. I didn't know anything about the culture. I didn't know what was cool, what was not. I was just like this little kid still wearing the clothes I used to wear in India, which they used to make fun of. They're like, you can't go to school like that. And I was like, okay. I used to just be fascinated by the smallest things. I remember the Cracker Jack boxes. They used to have like gifts. All those things were like fascinating to me. I'm like, oh, this Cracker Jack thing, whatever it is, tastes delicious. But on top of that, there was like a little watch. It was like a little toy watch. It was like a yellow, you know, but I was just fascinated by it. I used to wear it like it was cool. And I remember it being made fun of. And I didn't understand why other people didn't think it was cool. A, it was free. And it came in this box and this amazing wrapping, packaging, all those things were like, I was just taken by it. And they used to be like, hey man, you can't rock that shit to school. Like, that's not gonna work. I'm like, but I like it. They was just, you know, laugh. And I think they probably thought it was endearing on some level. But yes, yeah, so I just, you know, kind of followed their lead and eventually got to know more kids in the neighborhood. Just started watching them, see what they were doing. You know, you just try to fit in and try to make yourself less noticeable, really out of fear. So that was the thing that I was, I think, unconsciously, subconsciously, and maybe on some level, just try not to bring attention to myself for being different.
Wrote my first rhyme on the back of this test I failed. Mom's belt left well, so my tail to no avail. 89 state of mind, black parkas on the train. Bad English on my tongue, fuck the world, my refrain. Up in my teacher's face, cause she called me an enigma. Principal asked why, I said I ain't no enigma. Stigma, sad nigga all alone, no big bro with a part-time dad. Felt like the world just ditched you, shit you, it's just me. Dazed militant, rage saying fuck this school day. Scowl on my face like my fake cube tape. On the schoolyard of ball fists, mutes a day. Swinging stand, got jumped, caught a few gory ones. Blood on my guest jeans, I stole from the Emporium. Orient them, gone is a cherubic smile. Born again, American feral child.
Welcome to the new world. Welcome to the new world. Sand niggas is hot to that.
I didn't know the difference between like hip-hop culture and rap music. I was probably introduced to both, but rap music was a thing that really stood out to me. I had never heard anything like it. You know, the bass, the drums. Growing up in India, there was only one state-sponsored station, and they would have these programs on, but it was all about South Asian culture, or Indian culture, if you will. And I think once I had heard like a Michael Jackson record that somebody's dad or brother had brought back to India from, you know, one of their travels. And my best friend Amit was really into like U2 and he used to play these things. I didn't really connect to it. My mom is a singer. She used to play a lot of ghazals, you know, which is rooted in poetry actually, right? It comes from Persian poets really and Urdu and, you know. So that's what I was exposed to. So when I heard rap music, I was like, what is this? And how are they talking so fast? And what are they saying? But I just like the way that the words fit over the beat. I couldn't even articulate that back then. It was just like an intuitive thing that I felt. I felt the aggression in it because I was also on some level really upset and angry at having to be in America, having left my friends. I liked the attitude in it because it kind of mirrored what I was feeling but couldn't express. A lot of the words I didn't really understand. The context I didn't understand. So I think it was the tone of the music that I connected to first. I knew English, but I didn't speak American English. I didn't know exactly how to communicate with my peers. I probably had a British affect, India being part of the British Empire, and you know, me going to school learning English was different than me actually communicating in English. Like I didn't think in English. You know, I thought in my mother tongue. And again, I don't know if I made a conscious decision to switch the way that I was communicating with the world and what I was taking in. But eventually, just listening to rap music all the time, I started picking up on things. And then I had more questions. I had more questions about race. I had more questions about slavery. I had more questions about why was it that these people that were rapping were upset. And so, you know, you listen to it, and then you slowly start thinking about yourself. Well, how do I fit in into this whole piece and puzzle here? Because there's no other kids that look like me in my neighborhood or my school. Well, I know I'm not white. I know I'm not black. I'm somewhere here, but most of my friends are, you know, people of color, black and brown. And so it just started begging more questions. And initially, I would just, you know, rap to myself. I don't know what I was saying, what I was even, I just was rapping to the beat, you know, making up, mimicking other people probably. When I got to high school is when I really just like dove completely into it, into like hip hop culture and rap music, because that's all I listened to, like nonstop. I'd always have the headphones on, Tower Records every Tuesday with my paper route money or whatever money I had. Every Tuesday a new record would come out and I'd be there. Or I might even go there like the day before to try to get a record before it's released. And I would just play it nonstop. I listened to the same record for months on end, you know, maybe swap it out, go back to it. And so I was really immersing myself in it. And I still had no idea about craft. I had no idea like what the rappers were doing that made it sound good. All I knew was that I liked it. So I would write words, I would try to flow. And then by the time I got to high school, I met my friend Ray, who I'd known since middle school off and on, but him and I really just started bonding over rap music and hip hop culture. And, you know, we used to make little pause mixtapes. And then I remember like sneaking in like a little, I had like a little Radio Shack mic. And I remember like just writing a little, like, I don't know, probably like 10 bar verse or something, and sending it to him. I actually mailed it to him, and he responded back with like a rap himself. And I was like, oh. So we just started going back and forth, rapping on like a little four track. And then I think by the time I got to college, I really started immersing myself in, you know, going to the college radio station. I had a good friend, Jason, who was a DJ in his dorm room, and we should just go there and freestyle.
Now the feral child grew and shed the last of his innocence, from immigrant bewilderment to feeling so militant. Armor consists of all the hurt that's been calcified, dragging live on tour, cocksure and glassy-eyed. Popping course, talking crass to all the matrons who wonder out loud, with zoo did he escape from? Made from pagan blood, bathed in sage and rum. Malaykum as-salam to my American awakening. Married to the black struggle and the plight of brave men. Carried all my rage from the page to the stage, then broke the brazen chains on their language of enslavement. Strangled their alphabet, mangled its arrangement. Stocked the snare, stabbed the shaker, and raped the bass drum. From days in my basement to scraps on a pavement. The hate for the love of the place I'm estranged from. Couldn't fix my own life, so fuck it, had to break something. My dear old mama feels I'm going astray. Chasing all my dreams, but they running away. Took a sweet, sweet stumble trying to keep up the pace. But these scars tell the world your son's coming of age.
When I got to college, I met a lot of other South Asian people that were born and raised here. They had a different relationship to India than I did. I had spent those 12 years growing up in India, and I knew very clearly what I was. For me, a watershed event was 9/11. 9/11 happened, and all of a sudden, people like me and people that look like me were targets, you know, of the state. They were targets of the media and how we were being portrayed. And I think that's when I shifted from, okay, yeah, I'm South Asian and I rap, to like, wait, I'm a South Asian living in America and I rap, and my story is unfolding right before me, and I'm having these terrible experiences after 9/11 with, you know, authorities, people in stores, and just everyday interactions, you know, being on the train, being in my car, whatever. Just, and so that's when I got a little more, I think, focused in talking about not only my identity as it pertains to being in America, but I guess what we would call now like white supremacy writ large, and how that's a feature of American life. And I started making connections between my own experiences as an immigrant and other folks that were immigrants, but also connecting my experience to the black experience. There were similarities in terms of how we were experiencing the world, you know? And so that's when the identity piece really started taking hold.
Had to wait a hellish 8 years for promise of a new day. American me, boy, look like Uday. Talk like Toure with a mop like Coupe. Middle name ain't the same, but it's close to Hussein. Brand new me staring in the mirror's glare. Got a 5 a.m. shadow, crooked teeth, no veneers. Hook nose, baby hair, my baby don't care. She loved me for me, so I parade my ugly. Like nothing else matters but my swag. I know I look like I should drive a cab. Either that or a Mujahideen live from Baghdad. In grainy pixels without Rachel Ray's scarf swag. But I'm foreign born, American bred. American schooled, American threat. Red, white, and blue, I'm American dumb. Just like you, but I'm brown and this color don't run like.
My friends have always called me G. And then Malabar comes from the Malabar coast in South India, which is where my father's people are from. And I just had a connection to that place. I forget how it actually was born, but I think it was probably, you know, I guess in the same way, like if you watch The Godfather, Vito shows up to the United States and they're like, Vito, where are you from? Corleone. Okay, Vito Corleone, right? It's rooted to a place. And so I think there was probably some need or desire to want to connect myself to my place of origin. When I came out of college, I just needed a job because I had these loans, and I, you know, so I just took whatever job came my way. And then during that time, you know, whatever money I was making, myself and Ray, we were taking that money and just putting it in the studio. This is when, you know, there were no home studios. So we'd record studio time at this recording studio called Phase in Maryland. And that was expensive. Studio time was expensive. Buying Ampex reels, which I'm sure a lot of listeners may or may not know what that is, but you needed like this massive reel that you would have to take into the studio and got to pay the engineer. So all my money was going towards that. But we also released a album at the time. And what the album allowed us to do was, you know, it caught some people's notice. And we were able to travel and do shows, different places around the country, different colleges, youth organizations. And I got to meet young people. And I remember a friend of mine saying, you know, I think the young people really respond to you. You should do more workshops. And I was like, all right, cool. That sounds good. But, you know, that doesn't look like it pays much. Same friend sent me this opportunity when I was living in Philly working this job I didn't like. And she was like, hey, you should apply for this job. I think you'd be good at it. So I applied for it. It was a college access program working with young people who were entering predominantly white institutions across the country. Anyway, I went through the process and I got the job and I was just so happy because I could be myself at this job. That's when I moved to New York and, you know, obviously the shadow of 9/11 was still hanging over the city and anti-Brown, anti-Arab discrimination and hate was very much alive. And so that was also kind of fueling it. And also just being in New York, I think it was inspiring on so many levels. The city has this kinetic energy, and people just kind of feed off of each other. And so I was hitting up open mics after work and just really connecting to how I wanted to be in the world, which was do the work that I believe in, that I love, and I get to do this music thing on the side. And it's allowing me to travel and go to places around the country, which was amazing to see, you know, to go to places like Bloomington, Indiana, or like go to Minnesota, just these random places that I would have never visited otherwise. It really shaped my understanding of myself in this country, but also understood the country a little bit better than I had up to that point, because I'd only lived in urban settings. When I first started out, I didn't even know other South Asian people were into hip hop or rap music, because I didn't know that many. And we were just putting out music as ourselves and, you know, different folks like hip hop heads were gravitating to it. And I think it caught the notice of some people. And then all of a sudden there were a few academics, well, one specifically, Natasha Sharma, who really took an interest in my work. She was actually working on her PhD around South Asians in hip hop. And so there were these folks spread out across the country that were beatboxing or breaking or writing raps, you know, in their own pocket. So she drew a constellation, if you will, of all these folks that were doing it. And I got to meet some of these folks later on. But initially, I never made the kind of music I was making with the audience in mind. But for whatever reason, folks became interested in what I had to say. And there was some folks thought, oh, it's a novelty. You know, this Indian kid thinks he's black, or he thinks he's a rapper. And I just kind of dismissed it, ignored it, because it wasn't important to me what anyone else thought outside of what I thought, which was I was loved the craft, loved the art. And I was giving it my all, so it didn't really faze me. But there was a good 5 to 7 years where a lot of opportunities I was getting was through the South Asian community in terms of, hey, here's this kid who's got a voice, he's saying some things that we might be interested in looking at. So it did open up many avenues for me in terms of just being out in front of people. It is what it is, kiss your wife and your kids, and if they ask you better tell them you might come back a felon. Oblique brown. It was the moment I feared the corner was clear, or so I thought. Then a fucking cop appeared in my rear view. Red blueberries was flashed. Flagged me to the side of the road, started asking for license, registration. Stayed silent and patient, wait. As a cop ran my blades, he came back moments later, scanning my face, disappointed. Ain't no warrants in my name, and this ride's clean, man. I got it in my mama name. What I do? You ran a red illegal, you that's two tickets. True, pass them over. I'd love to stay and kick it, but I catch you in court. You know I'ma fight it. Hold up, Osama. Don't be so nearsighted. Osama. Before I snatched the ticket, the cop got excited. Clutched his Glock and screamed. Don't even budge, bitch. Thought he called Tom Ridge to tell him flip the color switch. A white boy rock a beard, he's considered rugged. True. And if I sport one, I'm a threat to the public. What you got in the trunk? Any guns, drugs, explosives? Explosives? Nope. Got some CDs, though you can keep as coasters. Where'd you come from? Right around the corner. I just rocked the show, man. Go ask the owner. You had drinks, even one or two Coronas? Nope, I'm an organ donor, but it's too early to be one. You ever been to jail? Nope. Well, you about to be once. On what charges? Any charges I choose, fuck. DUI, resisting arrest, disorderly conduct. Yup, just some America's worst nightmare. Cause I'm young, brown, and look Middle Eastern, yeah, now. Get out the car, hands up, knees on the floor. I said my sister went to Seton Hall, I know about the law. He's like, dude, your face is probable cause. What I'm
sets. Others coming out the spot. Karma bar lounge in Queens, cops harassing for no damn reason, man. It's like a regular routine out there, you know what I'm saying? New York City. Tell you what happened, man. I stepped out the car, put my hands up on the hood. The cop calling me names, insulting my manhood. Patted me down, found a box of Newports, threw them to the ground, then warned.
Don't make me use force.
Force for what? Putting up resistance, you ain't gonna villainize me to validate your existence.
Listen, boy, this is routine procedure. Keep yapping, yeah. And I'll revoke your visa.
Right then, my girl pulled up right beside me, jumped out her car and asked the officer politely, "What's going on here? Leave him alone. He ain't do shit. We just on our way home from listening to some music."
Mind your business. Don't be a nuisance.
She proceeded, so he turned and started staring at her boobs and made comments about the way that she strut.
What?
Staring at her butt.
What?
Calling her a slut. Fuck. I reacted, jabbed his back with my elbow.
Shit. Aw, hell no, you.
All along, all this copper was looking for was a reason, and I gave him one. Assault, see y'all at the freezing. So I'm in the back of the cop car. He's already got me, right? But of course, he wanna go and call me a sand nigga. Wanna call me a coolie. Fuck, man. Sitting at the station, cuffed to a cell, surrounded by browns and a cold steel smell. Wondering why we cross the dark waters with its past, slavery, exploitation, slaughter through the bars and the cells, CEOs tossing ham sandwiches. Laugh, laugh, and treating us like savages. But America's built through inhumane pain, and I bet you felt safe when the Fox News came. Uday and Kusei, Hussein slain. To you, we all the same. If you black, you sell crack. If you brown, you down buildings. Timmy McVeigh did the same
hell
shit.
Yeah.
Y'all killed him, but you ain't trampled the rights of them white civilians. Didn't harass them or ask them for passports, visas. Didn't freeze their assets, no search, no seizures. While Bush is up on stage, quoting Jesus. While the sons of the slums cuffed up on Trump charges. Cause we look different, talk different, labeled as jihadists.
Uh-huh.
Back in the cell, I'm nodding off to a drip from a tap. But the scat line in his own disawakens my sense of smell. Still in hell. A day later, saw the judge ain't have to post bail. Got released on my own reconnaissance. With a court date, no lawyer. Shit ain't looking promising. It is what it is. Kiss your wifey and kids. And if they ask, you better tell them you might come back a felon. Oblique brown, oblique, oblique, oblique brown. Oblique brown, oblique, oblique, oblique brown. It is what it is. Kiss your wifey and kids. And if they ask, you better tell them you might come back a felon. Oblique brown, oblique, oblique, oblique brown. Deep down, beat down by the system. This one goes out to Balbir Singh Sodhi, Vincent Chin, Amadou Diallo, and anybody and everybody who's been fucked with because they skin tone religious beliefs. And you know the cops are racist, man. Supposed to protect and serve you. All they do is serve you. Safe travels.
I applied to a MFA program, Master of Fine Arts and Creative Writing at Brooklyn College, and I happened to get in. Did the program, I learned a lot. And coming out of that, I didn't have a job or anything like that. And so I was like, well, you know, it's time for a change. And I was dating someone that lived in L.A. too. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to come out here and see what L.A. is about. So I showed up and I didn't have a job, was trying to figure out what to do. I'd seen something on Craigslist for a teaching artist from this organization called Street Poets. And I said, all right, well, let me just email them and see if I can come by. And that's what I did. I emailed Street Poets. It was Allison. Allison responded. Allison Tatlock, who's also on the board. She was like, hey, why don't you come through? We have this thing called Seeking Peace and get to meet our community. Long story short, I got to meet the staff that was there at the time. And then, Chris, you invited me to come up to Camp Miller. Just like, hey, I'm doing this, I do these workshops. And it was a long drive up Malibu and, you know, through the canyon. And I remember stepping into that place and I didn't want to be there. I'll be real with you. Like, I was just like, man, it's terrible to see young people locked up like this. But the time that we spent with them, I was like, oh, this is different, you know? And so I think I just stayed in contact with Street Poets after that. And then eventually you asked me if I would come on as a teaching artist. And so that's how I got introduced to the real LA. When I really started engaging in the work and asking young people to tell their story and to connect to some of their gifts and their wounds, it was bringing up shit for me that I didn't know what to do. And there was some fear there around committing that to a record. And I think it got to a point where well, I'm not really being authentic and true to myself if I'm asking young people to share their stories and I can't share my stories. And I remember, Chris, you were pushing me as well to kind of go a little deeper into some of that other stuff that created the artist persona that I was taking on. Oftentimes, rappers do take on personas, personalities as a shield to protect themselves from what they're going through. And it's connected to this idea of the hero's journey. You know, there's something mythic about how rappers, MCs have created their own stories. And so I had created a version of my story, which was this kid coming from India and learning how to play with language. And I was making these records and I was upset at society, and all that was true. But there was another layer as well that was difficult to crack, because to crack it meant going back to that place of like the original pain.
The holy was near when Brother Matthai's wooden ruler did his due diligence on my knuckles. I felt its glory when the whip buckled me to the floor. I felt its love as I fell in pain and piss blotted my shorts. The holy loomed large on that chipped wall, Jesus' damn self. Beatific glow, red bulb for a heart and white robe. The holy man's guide to dressing holy. The holy circled that slum where I was raised, with three temples, two mosques, three churches, one agyari, and all their parishioners, all holy. Even when they did ungodly deeds and left in their wake battered wives and children. The holy was near in each breath the city took, in each heave and sigh I felt echo in my tiny body. The holy was near when I was pissed drunk, roused awake off that stranger's tile floor and given hot tea with two pieces of buttered toast. The holy was near when I was far from it, at a bar, hard charging drunk, playing father to myself, talking like he might, drinking like he did. The holy was near in that clearing where I sat and sobbed for hours, crying real tears for a mother who couldn't, because tears don't pay rent or raise children. The holy was near, even in that temple that I visited. The pundit said, no leather in the house of God will defile the purity, shoes and belt off. I explained that my wallet, what with my tithe, was made from American cowhide. The holy makes exceptions, he said. But the holy was nearer when I walked away and bought a man a meal instead. The holy is near. It's all around us. In prisons, in broken schools, in gang tats and murals, in the words of heartbreak, in a cut or scar tissue. And so I sit inside it, a filthy poet begging to be seen against all its beauty.
So I think that's how I shifted. I became more honest. I became more honest with myself, and also had the courage now, which I had learned by watching young people, to put my shit out there and say, okay, this is what I went through. This is what I'm dealing with. No, there's no shame in it. There's actually a lot of strength in it.
Mama's oldest, papa's lost son, from the generation that venerates those that die young, and hood Cy Youngs who pitch that high strung iron lung, mired in fire, the song siren sung. I was sired by the Richard Pryce, Mikes and Iversons in my American life. Before that I was a Nyer son. Foreign born, America scorned, came of age in the era of terror. Guess I'm a spawn, though I recall days of dads were a booze at Comic Con. Now we all Malik Khans, I'm a siege with dirty bombs, trying to cut my way through this brand new narrative with a serrated tongue that translates from the Arabic. Damn the drones, modern day David Farragut, inherited arrogance, my strut street etiquette, predicated on getting dope to the bread leavens and slap box with Jesus in front of dead reverends.
Mama's youngest, papa's lost son, from the generation where we wanna be thugs with guns.
Mama's oldest, papa's lost son, from the generation that venerates those that die young.
Mama's youngest,
mama's oldest, papa's gone, so we...
Initially, it was very difficult to go there. I think it led to a lot of confusion, a lot of anger, a lot of self-abuse, actually. And that was something I was ashamed of and try to keep hidden from myself. But I knew I had to go through that to be able to connect to what was on the other side of, you know, what we call the Kalapani or the Black Waters, which is where my ancestral roots are. I could call upon what I've learned around, you know, race, politics, XYZ. I could call upon what I've learned now about my own story. And now I can call upon what I know is a big part of where I derive strength from, which is my ancestors.
Water and spirit, vodka and cigarettes. You're a wind-whipped rock chipped off of Aksum's secrets. Wildness is calling you home, you Edomate zone. A better day's poem, your people's regret song. A jukebox tune, homes for the dead and gone. Who gifted you a shantytown, shrine that's your hand-me-down. Brandy, wine, liquor, sipper, take a swig and say, I can smudge you with sage or bludgeon you with grass blades. Praise the pain, man. Gift is in your wound. Each scar's a different room that offers shattered mirror views to the lines on your face that finds pathways to a goon. Conjure up the spirit that lives in Hafez's tomb. The night is young forever, but the fight you fight is old. An ancient argument found in every bar you win. Now drink your bane, aim a looking glass at the past you win. She Malahu, now you was not Chiragudin.
I never looked at street poets like an organization. I looked at it more like an organ, like this beating heart that brought people in and let people see themselves and see each other. People could have different ancestral backgrounds, different languages they speak at home, different foods they eat. But when you come to a street poets event, there's something that I feel like people intuitively understand, the ritual of paying respect to themselves, to their families, to the ones that are no longer here, to the written word, and how do you even invite that in, and how do you listen deeply, how do you sit in silence? In our culture, I think people have a hard time sitting in silence, and I've been in spaces where silence is ritualized as street poets in a way that's really powerful. You step in, and it's almost like it is a portal. It transports you to what can be.
Shining sun, cutting shadows through the crowns of palm trees, drowning stress. Every fam like the Cosby's, Camry's in the yard. Lights on inside, kitchen cabinet, stack bills paid on time. Love to see the block at peace and cops at ease. Only stop and ask you if you'd rather walk or be riding shotgun. All the way to work in this hot sun. Response show enough, cause I got a broken old truck. Stop for coffee and I bought him coke and the donuts. This is Block and Peace, jobs, streets, dogs, cookouts by the beach, Bloods and Crips teach kids to skip rope on the streets. No dope on the streets unless it's rope on a beat. The code on the streets is help the poor and the weak. You reap what you sow, sow seeds of peace. Grow seeds to trees and shake the block with peace. One.
Everything that I am doing in this life right now and what I have been doing is connected to hip-hop culture, connected to rap music. Hip-hop culture has basically opened up doors that I didn't even think existed. Like, if it wasn't for hip-hop, I wouldn't have walked into that nonprofit. If it wasn't for hip-hop, I wouldn't have gotten my MFA. If it wasn't for hip-hop, I wouldn't have done those two things and then found street poets. If it wasn't for hip-hop, I wouldn't have found street poets, done that work, and continue to do the work I'm doing now, which is, you know, really about helping people build community, see themselves, see each other, helping people really connect to their own stories and to the stories that they tell about themselves and others. And so I guess on paper you could call it diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging work. We call ourselves a creative strategy impact firm, and it's called Third Settlements. So we work with folks across sectors. You know, we work with professional sports teams, working with nonprofits, with foundations, advertising. And I think the one thing that I've noticed in all those spaces is that people really just want to be seen, and workspaces oftentimes are not conducive to that. And so our job is to help people see each other, see themselves, and build a culture where, you know, you can't be productive in this world if you're not loved or feel loved. And I think part of my job is to allow people into that and have them grapple with that and see that, where they can move towards a more loving way of being with each other.
I got love for the homies still stuck on the grind. I got love for the haters. haters who done lost their mind. I got love for the earth, the waters of a birth. I got love for the fire in my heart when it hurts. I got love for my people, the poet in the streets. I got love for the sister in the cut making beats. I got love for the rhymers, the rappers, the one. I got love for the mamas who rise with the sun. With the sun, with the sun.
Hear more episodes like this by subscribing to Street Poets Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get yours. Metaphors be with you.